Welcome to the Nahrain Network podcast series. My name is Dr. Mihyar Kazem, and today we're with Dr. Bijar Othman Ahmed. Hello, Bijar. How are you?
How are you, Dr. Mihyar?
You're a British Institute for the Study of Iraq, Nahrain Network scholar.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for you. Thank you for this invitation and for this opportunity to talk with you through this podcast.
It's a pleasure to have you. Could you introduce yourself?
Of course. My name is Bijar Othman Ahmed. I'm from Erbil. I mean Kurdistan of Iraq. I was born in 1989 and I studied at Salahuddin University Department of History at Salahuddin University in Erbil. And graduated there. Then I studied master degree in Turkey in Sakarya University. I wrote my master in Turkish. And then I moved to Malaysia in the International Islamic University, Malaysia. I did my PhD there. Then I came back and I started my work as employee or as a lecturer in the Soran University and Koya University. But right now I'm teaching in Soran University Department of History.
And Soran is a part of the governorate of Erbil.
Yeah.
Great. And could you tell us a bit about your research?
Surely. Honestly, the title of my research is the heritage of the work and heritage of the Jews in Koya from 1918 to 1951, because by that time, as you know, in 1918, the Ottoman Empire collapsed or destroyed in this area, and the Britons got rule there. And then in 1951, in generally the Jews lived Iraq, especially in, I can say, most of the cities in Iraq in general, and including Koya city. By that time, they legally lived, they left Iraq. That's why I selected this this period. This is about the title and about the honestly, I concentrate on the how to call the historical and ethnic studies by that time, especially their heritage and their work. How was their work in Koya, and how was their work or economic like influenced on the Koya community by that time? I mean, Jewish community, Jewish economic, how was influenced on the community, and also their heritage. What was their heritage, and how was their heritage, and what was the conflict or relation between Kurdish by that time or Muslims and non-Muslims, especially Jews with the Kurdish community.
Yeah. So your research is on the Jews of Koya.
Yeah.
Between this period, 1918 to 1951.
Yeah.
What kind of numbers are we looking at? What kind of concentrations of the Jewish community were there in Koya?
Of course, we can concentrate on the, as I mentioned, on their history, especially for their economic life and their heritage. Why I say the economy, their economic life, because if we look at the history of the Jews in general, in Iraq in general, or I mean in Kurdistan of Iraq, and also in Koya city, the Jews were very rich and they were very popular. They were.
Do we know the number of Jews in the city?
Of course, according to the statistics by that time, where happened, where has have been done, in 1927, I can say around 115 houses by that time.
So these are houses, are meaning families?
Yes, families. I mean families, but not about number of the
households.
Inhabitants. Yeah. But the number increased in 1947 during the statistics. By that time, the number was increased around 250. Increased to 250.
When was this?
In Koya. I mean, in 1947.
Mm.
Yeah. The number increased by that time because some of families, as you know, grow up and some of them got married, especially, and some of them got married with the non-Muslims. With non-Jewish communities, especially with the Muslim boys. There are a lot of stories who Muslims guys got married with the Jewish girls, and there's a lot of poems on that, and a lot of singers, songs about that. Of course, that's why their relationship with the, I mean, Jews' relationship with the Muslims in Kuwait and Christians in Kuwait was very strong, and was they lived together in tolerance, and they really, we can say that coexistence were very known and very good relationship by that time.
In Kurdistan of Iraq, where were the other communities in Iraqi Kurdistan?
Yeah.
Iraqi Jewish communities, where they were in Konya, they were in Sulaymaniyah, the city.
Yeah.
Were they spread out across the whole region?
Yeah, of course they were separated, not only in, as I mentioned, not only in Konya, in generally in Kurdistan of Iraq, there are a lot of cities who Jews lived. For example, in Konya, as you mentioned, Sulaymaniyah, in Halabja, and in Akre, and in Zaho, even in Barzan, in Konya, in not only Kurdistan of Iraq, even in Iraq, also in in Karbala and in Baghdad, in Basra. I have found a lot of sources, a lot of archives here in the National Archive and British Libraries. I found a lot of archives which talks about the
these
Jews.
Archives are where are they from exactly?
Exactly from British from
the British National government archive. Archives.
Yeah, of course, it's the formal letters from British archives. Yeah,
and they tell us, they give us a picture of what kind of picture do these archives tell us? Or give us?
In generally, there's depends on the situation which what happened by that time. But in generally, we can say that some of them talks about their economic situation, for example, about the their merchant workers or their trade of the Jews. And some of them, I can say it's political situation, because some of them, for example, in I have seen some documents that some Jews had been killed by that time, especially in the 15th, by the mid of 15th and the mid of the 14th, some of Jews were killed.
In the 40s and 50s.
Yeah, of course, especially during the first, during the Second World War. And that's why one of the most important studying about my research, I can say that by that time, once the Jews were killed and threatened in generally, in everywhere over the world, especially in Iraq and in Kurdistan, so maybe somewhere, but the situation by that time was different in Iraq or in Kurdistan especially, and especially in Konya, because by that time we have a mullah, and according their books and according to the Jewish books, for example, we have an author, we have a writer named Yafa. Yafa wrote her diary book, and in his memory book says that once I was a child, I remember by that time the Jews everywhere were threatened and were killed, but by that time there were a mullah in Konya named Mullah Gaura. Mullah Gaura is a very known scholar in Konya and in Kurdistan among Kurdish. He was the father of Mas'ud Muhammad, a Kurdish great scholar, and he says that Mullah Gaura issued a fatwa to protect us. She says that, I mean, Yafa, the author, the writer, she says that Mullah Gaura issued a fatwa to protect us, and she banned it according to Islamic religion. And she said that Mullah Gaura mentioned to be banned everything and protected the places according
this?
To Islam.
When was this?
I can say exactly in 1943. 1943-42 also, and not only issued, they were the great mullah issued a fatwa. Also, there were a very strong man, very known man there from the Ghafuri tribe named Kakaziadi Koya. Kakaziadi Koya also the son of Hama Agha of Koya. And, fortunately, I have written a book on Hama Agha of Koya according to the Ottoman archives. Also, this man was the head of the tribe, or the nomad of the Ghafuri tribe, and he provided a lot of guards, bodyguards or guards to protect the Jewish families, Jewish houses, and Jewish quarters. Why? Because they said, and they believed that maybe not the population of Konya, the community of Konya, maybe some people around Konya came to there and tries to kill them or tries to threaten them. That's why they try to protect these Jews. And also in the other side, the Jews was very helpful. They were very helpful for the community of Koya, especially regarding economic, because they whatever they have done, they were provided and they worked in the factory. For example, they got fabrics or everything, but they created in Koya City. That's why they got a lot of workers. They need a lot of workers and employers. And then by that time, the economic situation, I can say that, grow up. And I can say that according to my researches or to the beginning or the first outcomes of my research, I can say that the economic situation by that time was much better than now. In Koya City, because of this point, because now there are not a lot, there are not any factory in the city. Only there's a bazaar in general. I mean, great bazaar and university. But by that time, no, there were, I can say, more than 14 to 15 factories, different factories.
And this data you're collecting, is it from Iraq? Is it from internationally available? Where is the data that you're collecting from?
The data collecting in generally, I can say for the first time before coming to the UK, I got a lot of archive. I've collected a lot of sources. I looked for the sources. How was the study? How was the history of the Jews in Koya? I collected all of them. Then I tried, as I mentioned in the method of my research. And use it oral history. Of course, I use it oral history methods because I tried to interview some Jews or some Jews who lived in Koya before. I tried to interview with some old people in the Koya city who lived with the Jews and remembered the Jewish life by that time. Who lived with the Jews and. They talk at every aspect from every aspect about the Jews and their life with the Jews. And fortunately, I have taken, or I can say we have taken, a lot of videos during this interviews.
And for the scholarship that you are currently undertaking, your host is at the London School of Economics. It's Dr. Maruf Kaabi. And you've been able to access the National Archives and the British Library. And maybe also conduct additional interviews in London or in the UK.
Of course. I have several interviews. I'll conduct interviews. One of them in London and two of them in Manchester. I will conduct some Jews or their parents, or they live it in Koya, or their parents live it in Koya. I mean, they are Jews, but their parents live it in Koya. That's why I'm talking with them on how was their life and their situation economically, and how was their heritage by that time.
Who else has studied the Jews of Koya? Are there other authors, researchers, academics that have looked at the Jews of Koya? Or is this the first study?
To be honest, I have to be very... I have to mention some sources here, especially we have, I can say there is a very known research about the Jewish inquiry, but it was very, very beginning by that time, around in 2011. By that time, Dr. Goran, he wrote a research he wrote a research about the Jews in Koya, but he didn't concentrate very well on their economic life and their heritage life of the Jews in Koya. He just interviewed some population of Koya who lived or who saw the Jewish community by that time, and also interviewed some people who their parents belonged to the Jews, but then they converted to Islam, and interviewed that. But and also I can say that he used it 4 or 5 other books, but he has not used any archives, formal details or archives. And also another research written by the Jews of Koya written by Dr. Jamal. I can say it was Dr. Goran's reputation with some new findings, but it was not everything, especially about their heritage and their economic life, because the important, one of the most important point of the Jewish inquiry, I can say that this point is economic life of the Jews, not political life, not social life, because we know a lot about their social life, how was there, and the politically how was, but their role, their economic role, was forgotten. That's why I try to concentrate of there and their heritage, because they had done a lot of things for Koya. Even the population of Koya tries to conduct that and to repeat this kind behaviors in Koya.
And in terms of, I mean, a big component of your study is about the economic life of the Jews of Koya.
Yeah.
And so you mentioned there were owners of factories.
Yeah.
What type of factories were we?
For example, for making shoes, or for fabric, or for painting clothes. In that time, as you know, maybe you bought some fabrics, but you want to paint something. And yeah, there were a special fabric named Khamkhana, or there were a special factory named for making blanket or something. Even my grandfather, Ahmed, I mean, my father's father, my dad's father, Ahmed, has learned this type position or this kind type job named Zolai. Zolai is a type for making fabric or something to protect yourself or to wear something. But in my father by that time changed his way through the same work to creating sajada, to prayer, or for Muslim, I can say that. And there are other workers, not only for that. And this, they created tables or something for food or something for, and not only for food, for clothes, for special type clothes. Especially they found special type clothes for women, named Chashu Tambari. It was very known among Christian communities and Muslim and non-Muslim, I mean, and Jewish community. They wear it when they went to the bazaar or to anywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, when they went out, they use it, this Charshik Cambari. And fortunately, I got this Charshik Cambari, and I got, and I have taken pictures for my research.
And in your research,
yeah,
where are the Iraqi Jews from Koya now? Yeah. Where are they in the world?
Yeah, it is a very good question. Honestly, once they left Iraq, they left Iraq to Israel. They lived in Israel. And even now there are a lot of people in Israel who lives in Koya, and even their tomb is collected together and tried to their tombs to be together with the Koya and Israel. And they said that even they call themselves like Koya and Jews. And even here in the UK, in London and in Manchester, there are some families who belong to the Jews of the Koya, or their parents belong to the Jews of the Koya. And I have introduced some people here in London who their parents were Jewish in Koya and lived in Koya. But no, they, these friends or them, these persons, and they grow up in London and they lived in London.
And just going back to also some of the points you mentioned, that by 1947, from 1918 to 1947,
yeah,
there was an increase in the number of households.
Sure.
But what happened after 1947?
Yeah, by that time, as you know, that every situation belonged to the, or depending on the political situation, especially in Middle East, in Middle Eastern country, everything is like the same. But especially in Iraq, there are a lot of changing by that time. After that time, after 1947 or 1948, the situation were changed, has been changed. And as you know, in 1948, the Israeli state were established formally. That's why the Iraqi government issued a decision to every Jew should leave Iraq, and they have to left their whatever they have, money, gold, or anything they have to left here, and they have to leave, and they have to go to Israel. And that's why most of the Jews left Kurdistan and Iraq in general.
So they left immediately after the creation.
Yeah.
Or in over several years, was it in a hurried way, or is it over several years?
I can say in for the first time it was a hurried way, but they didn't go everywhere. Every Jews was not went to the Israel by that time, because it took several times, especially in 1956 and on, and even in the 1917. I read a source. He said that some of Jews in Iraq in 1917 through Iran came to Israel, the Iraqi Jews. That's why, according to the source what I have read, I say this. That's why it took a long time.
And this was happening across the whole country, not just in Koya.
I can say, of course.
And in terms of your current research at the moment, were there any kind of exceptional pieces of information or things that you recently discovered during your scholarship that you didn't know when you were in your university in Soran? What kind of new pieces of information did you collect that you didn't know about before?
Of course. If I say there are a lot of new findings, whatever, which I, according during to my research, I have learned or I have noticed by that. Firstly, I would like to convey a very beautiful joking by that time. One of the people who I interviewed with them named Mordechai. No, Mordechai in generally, he lives in Israel. I can't go Israel because, as you know, I'm Iraqi and I'm following the Iraqi constitution, and I cannot go to Israel. I talked to him through WhatsApp, and we talked to him. He said that once we left Iraq, we tried, once we arrived to Israel, we didn't need the support of Israel, and we didn't need money a lot of, because we were rich and we could starting working and something. And I shocked. I said, how were you were rich and how you could start working and something? He said, because we were rich. But immediately I told him, but according to Iraqi constitution by that time and Iraqi rules by that time, you couldn't bring your gold or your money to other countries, and you have to leave everything in your country. How can I believe that you were rich? He said, once we left to Iraq, we tried to cook dolma and kofta. Maybe you know dolma and kofta is Middle Eastern food, especially kofta is very special for Kurdish cooking and Kurdish food. He said, once we created the kofta inside the wheat, around the wheat, they put meat inside the kofta. I said, instead of putting meat, we put gold. And then we put everything and cook it, and then we drop it to Israel. This was about this was one of the ways of that the Jews brought their gold to the Israel. But this was only a way, and there were a lot of, because as you know, and I can say that, but even there, they worked it and they were hard workers, because they knew a lot of workers, and they were merchants, or they were doing trade in Kurdistan. That's why I can say that their situation was not very difficult by that time. But not according to these examples of what I have taken. I don't say for everybody the situation.
So you're combining both the oral history methods of research with archival research, sort of mixed approach, and you're doing interviews in the country, in Iraqi Kurdistan, in other countries.
Sure.
And you're creating an overall picture of the context, your research, and what is going to be the final output of your research?
Of course, according this situation, as I mentioned, for the output of my research, I can say that even during my proposal, once I submitted to Nahrain Network, I mentioned and I suggested a lot of outputs to my research, especially understanding their life, the Jews' life, and how can we how can we get benefit from their life economically. And I can say that one of the most important thing here, we introduced a very active and very new network. I mean, Nahrain, it's very good for me, and it was a very good point for me. Surely, through this research, the Nahrain network and the Jewish life would be very familiar in Kurdistan in general, I can say, because even right now I received some messages and some emails. They are asking about my research, what you have written regarding Jews, and we would like to read it, or we would like to know about the Jews in Iraq and in Koya. I think it would be very outcome.
Do at your University of Soran, you're at the Department of History, and other universities, is there much known about the Jews of Iraq? Is it studied?
Yeah.
Is it part of the curricula in any way?
Yeah.
Or is it just general interest in the subject?
Of course, as I can say that the former head of the Department of History, Dr. Starshakh Hassan, now is the Vice Deputy Deputy Director of the Faculty of Arts in my college, in my Faculty of Arts at Soran University. He did his PhD on the Jewish life in Kurdistan. He did his PhD, he has done, and really he wrote a very good and very, I can say very strongly, wrote on the Jews. And once during his viva was the, I can say, one of the best and the most beautiful viva by that time had been done. It was around 2 years that happened. But as I mentioned, if you get this kind ethnicity who has long story in Kurdistan, I can say it, even you can take only one city, you can do write a lot of articles or a lot of several dissertations, because not only in Koya, in Suleimani also there are a lot of places named with the Jews, and even in other places now is very known city, for example Penzuin. Penzuin is located at the border of Iran-Iraq, in Kurdistan of Iraq. Penzuin, the name comes from five Jews. Penzuin, Penz already is Kurdish and Persian. This is the number, Panj or Pens, five mean, and Jews, Juin, Jews. Mm. Yeah, it comes from that. That's why I can say that we can do a lot of researches regarding Jews.
And you mentioned previously to me that there are some remnants of synagogues or cultural heritage in Koya.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, during my research and before coming here, I visited Koya a lot. I can say more than 10 times I went to Koya. I visited Koya. I went to the quarters of the Jews. Of course, according to my interviews in Iraq or in Koya, the old people who I interviewed with them, they mentioned and they showed me the Jewish temple there. I found it. Firstly, I found they told me only there's only one, there was one temple, but according to another interview, they said no, this building and this place is also was the temple of the Jews. And really I believed him, because once I read and I started to my work according to on the Jews, I saw that the Jews lived in Koya in five different places, I mean five different quarters, in Bafri Kandi and some other quarters, and they live it especially with the Muslims, not with the Christians, with the Muslim communities.
And the Jews of Konya use both the local languages, Kurdish, and of course their own Hebrew.
Especially for my latest person, as I mentioned, I interviewed through WhatsApp Mordecha, who lived in Konya, and he belongs to the religious family. His father's name is Suleyma, and they were guiding their community to religious, religious paths. In that time, of course, they were doing, they went to the school for the beginning. They went to primary and then secondary, but then they left mostly. They started working, or some of them, they continued their study and then became teacher or something, but mostly they left their study, but they continued their study and they learning Hebrew by in Konya. They learn it from their temple, because as I asked Mordecha, when did you and where did you learn Hebrew, he said I learned it in the temple in Konya. We studied, and even I said, once you came to Israel, how did you speak? How do you communicate with the other Jewish communities? He said, because we use it, Hebrew. Up until now, he speaks with his son. He speaks in Hebrew. He talked it to me in Kurdish, but with them, no, in Hebrew. That's why they learn it from, and they were not this example, not only in Korea. Even in Barzan, I have read Mordechai Zakin. Mordechai Zakin's book mentions that Mullah Mustafa Barzani, as you know, the Kurdish leader, Kurdish great leader, in 1914, in the Sherwan place, in the Sherwan Muslim district, in the Mergesor. Now it's a Nahya, or small town, it belongs to the Soran Qaza. By that time, there were a lot of Jews living there, and Mordechai Zakin mentions that in 14th, Mullah Mustafa Barzani provided special teacher, special or facilitator who knows Hebrew to the children, to the Jewish children, to teach them the Hebrew and guide them according to their religion.
And how long left do you have in your current scholarship?
In my current scholarship for living here, staying
in,
here?
In the scholarship that you have, the 2 months, how long, how much of time course, left do you
yeah,
have?
How much time? I can say 40 days. 40 days left for me.
And what do you plan to do for the rest of your scholarship?
Of course, I have a lot of plans, as I mentioned, because I have done most of them, but I have some of them need this time, and I every day... before going, in general, I'm going to National Archive and British Library. Most of my work is there. And once I went to there, before going, the night before going to, for example, to British Library or to National Archive, I do my schedule. I write my schedule for tomorrow or for the next day. What should I do? That's why once I go to the National Archive or British Library, and even to Lambethi Library, directly I go to my places, and I have seen a lot of YouTube channels or videos, tutorials regarding learning how I can conduct to these places. And according to my schedule, I have to collect a lot of data and a lot of archives, not only for my research, for my currently research, of course, in the future researchers also. And even in Soran University, as I mentioned, I'm teaching there, and also I'm supervising a student, including my my student under my supervise. I have helped 7 master students up until now, because once they know that I came here and I arrived, I'm working on the National Archive or British Library, they asked me to give them or provide them some archives or some untouchable or untouched information regarding their topic. I asked them, okay, no problem. I responded to them, give me your title and your content. Once I read their content and their title, I check it on Google, not Google it, I mean in the their catalog in the National Archive and British Library. I found some new information and send them, and they were praying for me and they said God bless you, and I said not only for me, even pray for Bnarin.
Yeah, it's very difficult accessing information and data in Iraq. It's,
yeah,
it's very difficult to do that.
Of course, yeah. Of course, most of them, because as you know, you do, up until now we have not a very national data collection. Of course, we have Dar al-Wathaiq lil-Iraq in Iraq, but I can say that there are not a lot of, or there is not every detailed archives by there. Maybe some of the detailed government doesn't want, or maybe some of them has been forgotten, especially as you know, due to this political situation in Iraq, everything has been influenced. But in Britain, no, in UK, I think everything has been protected.
When you go back to Koya, go back to the University of Soran,
yeah,
what do you plan to do there? What are your research plans and your ambitions for the next period?
Yeah, for the next period, once I came back to my country, I can say, or started my work, before everything, I will try to finalize my research. It's the first idea, my first point. After that, after I finished finishing the research, of course, I will hold a special workshop in my university regarding working and how to contact the National Archive or working with the libraries or any other sources in Britain, and how was Nahrin, of course, and I will talk about Nahrin Network, how Nahrin Network accepted my project and how was their behaving with me and how they helped me, Nahrin and BC and this kind of project, which was very useful for not only for me, for other Iraqian scholars, and of course in the near in future scholars maybe will get benefit from this idea or even from Nahrin.
On that note, thank you, Dr. Bejar Othman Ahmed from the Department of History, University of Soran. And of course, we look forward to your research outputs supported by the Nahrin Network and the British Institute for the Study of Iraq.
Thank you so much, dear Dr. Mahia, for this opportunity to interview with you. And thank you very much for Nahrin Network for providing this really incredible opportunity for me to accepting my project and accepting any other Iraqi researchers to bring them to Britain and to supporting them, I mean, by everything. Really, it is very good work and very great work. And of course, it will be a very important opportunity for every scholar, every researcher to try to do their work in the best way. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bejar.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.